Well, good to be here. Shalom to everyone. Shalom means peace. It means hello and goodbye. So you're never wrong with using the word. It's a blessing to be here in Oregon. We spent the night with our cousins, Wayne and Kay Cass. And it was interesting that down at the FMI seminar in LA, we met some missionaries who were active in Central America that knew Wayne's family years ago, the Godwins. I don't know if any of you know them, and we were reminiscing about the old days and he remembered his father and mother who were serving the Lord in all over Spanish-speaking South America. So the Lord is richly blessed and moved in our family. My grandfather, back in 1930s, was a United Brethren pastor in Kansas, and he had a blind man who he took to one of the revival meetings of Amy Simple McPherson. I think it was in Wichita. And the Lord healed him of his blindness. So my grandfather felt that he had to become part of that revival. And he left Kansas and brought the whole family to Los Angeles, where he became a Four Square minister. And ever since then, we've had that association. I believe Wayne's own mother, didn't she attend Life Bible College too? I think she did. And so we've just been blessed to serve there and to see the Lord faithfulness to each one of us. All seven of our children were born in Jerusalem, and there's a special blessing in the Psalms. It says, "For those that are blessed in Jerusalem," and I think that's been true. Just about a word of myself. I was born on May 14th, 1948. Does anyone know what that date means? Only the pastor and cousin Wayne. It was the very day that Israel became a state again, and so that makes me something very special. Yeah. No, no, I'd like to think that, no, but not really. I was born in Colombia, and. At 10 o'clock in the morning, and they were actually signing the independence document at 5 p.m. Israel time, which meant I was really born on the same hour. So the Lord knows where we're going to be serving, where we're going to be end up, it's a blessing to be in that land. When you talk about Israel, everyone has a certain amount of baggage and preconceived notions and ideas about that land. Very few people are neutral. Our son, we were just playing a video. Our son is into making videos in photography, and he produced one on the main street of Jerusalem of himself doing just some fun things. Not a redemptive message, just a fun video that he put on YouTube, and it went viral just within 3 hours. They knew it was going to be just explode all over the place, and it shows him walking down the street doing some tricks and things like that, and 20 of our young people from the church took part in the production of this video, and today there's over 4,200,000 people have viewed that video. But what I wanted to tell you, not to blow my own horn or brag about my kids, is that some of the blogs concerning, some of the comments concerning his production had nothing to do with artistic or lack of artistic connotation, but some said, you stole our land, you're an occupier, you're an evil person, which none of those things happen to be true about our son. He's just 23 and was having fun and made this video, but just as an example of people who immediately have positive or negative connotations. And one thing I think that helps me when I think of the Jewish people, they were chosen by God, and that chosenness has become a problem with a lot of society, a lot of the world, because they feel that God somehow loves the Jewish people more. Well, it's true that he chose them, but he chose them to serve. And when you look at it in that light, it takes the feeling of inequality or that God has favorites. He chose them to serve. And they did serve humanity by giving us the Bible, by giving us the prophets, the Lord. They couldn't. They've been unfaithful. They've been exiled into other countries. They've been spread around the world like no other people. They lost their identity, lost their nation. But the Bible also does. Foretold that they would be brought back to their nation over and over again in the Old Testament scriptures. It talks about them being regathered to the land of Israel. So that's what's happened. Their language was virtually a dead language. It was only in the synagogues did they use it to pray in, just like the Catholics used Latin in their mass, in their services. And about 30, 40 years ago, they decided to abandon Latin and use the vernacular of the languages of the people wherever the Catholic Church is. But the Hebrew language has been totally restored. And Liz and I, of course, speak Hebrew and Arabic as well, and use it in daily life, which is a miracle in itself. And so over and over again, we see that God has his hand on that nation, but he's not playing favorites. He doesn't love Jewish people more than the other nations, but they're chosen to serve once again. They haven't done it perfectly, and neither have we. I want to get some water, right? And I think that would be the theme of what I'm trying to share today, is that God has been faithful. And a lot of people believe in have been shifting their support from Israel because they believe that God has now replaced Israel with the church. And that's true that God's people, the church, have a role in, that's the center of God's activity in the earth today. But Romans 9, 10, 11 talks that the people that were rejected because of our inclusion in the gospel and in receiving God's plan and salvation for us would be regathered. It couldn't be clearer if you read Paul's epistle to the Romans. And so those that were rejected are have a date with destiny, and they'll know the saving power of the Messiah once again. And I might interject here that if you have questions or comments or and would like to ask anything from Israeli food to politics or any kind of scriptural application to the subject I'm talking about, I'd be happy to relate to those questions. But I think of Abraham when he was taking his son Isaac to offer him up on Mount Moriah. God just told him to go to a place, and that he would offer up his son as a sacrifice. And we know that children were sacrificed regularly in the cultures of that region, and so it wasn't a totally absurd thing like it would be in our day. But nevertheless, God had given him Isaac as the special son of promise. And we all know the story of what a hard and arduous time he had to bring Isaac into the world. But can you imagine the if he would have told Sarah what he was up to, she would have probably put poison in his food, or a good sleeping pill or something. When we think of God's supply for us, he had that ram tied up in the thicket, stuck in the thicket for that very purpose. But he was so intent on obeying God's word, he didn't notice that thicket was there all the time. And God has a blessing and provision for each one of us. And it will take the revelation and understanding of our hearts to be open to know that blessing, that provision is there all the time, and we'll just need to turn our heads to the right place to see that provision for us. And that provision isn't for anyone else. It's tied up for us. We don't have to be concerned about our neighbor taking that provision, that blessing. It's for us. And God has that should comfort all of us, to let us know that we're not going to miss out on what God has planned for us. And another thing about the offering up of Isaac, Abraham did receive revelation, and direction, but it was yesterday's revelation. And some of us get tied down to yesterday's plan, and we need to be conscious of God's current message of today. And the message of the moment was different, and the current message that he needed to pay attention to. So I take that to mean that we can't get bogged down in just religious, in the religious scheme of things. We need a fresh word from the Lord, not yesterday's word, not the word that we got last year, but the word that he has for us today. And so, otherwise, as he raised his hand to take the knife, to take the life of his son, he would have missed God. And that's important thing for us to be daily in His Word, daily in prayer, and to receive the message that is for that hour, for that minute, and not yesterday's. And in Israel, our son-in-law's a tour guide. He likes to share with people coming over that we have two and three places of almost everything holy in that city. At the foot of the Mount of Olives, we have the Garden of Gethsemane, but right next door, which is a Catholic-run place, the Church of All Nations, but right next door, we have a Russian Orthodox Garden of Gethsemane. And a little bit further down, there's the Greek Orthodox one. and then Mount Zion, we have the modern day Mount Zion, but just a block to the south, we have what we consider the original Mount Zion, which is the old Jebusite city that David conquered. And of course, in a block north is the Temple Mount, and that's also considered Mount Zion. They're all within blocks of each other, but that's just a fact of life there. We have two places where Jesus died and was crucified. We have the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, and then the Garden Tomb. And so we live in tensions not only politically, but also religiously. And what we know, there's not two of the Mount of Olives, and that is pretty stable. The Valley of Kedron, where Jesus crossed many times, that hasn't moved lately. The Lake of Galilee, that's still the same. But some of these sites that we have come in multiple forms. And certain people, when they come there, are almost offended to think that there's an alternate site. But the truth I come with from that is that we know Christ was crucified, died, and rose again, and it's not that important where it happened exactly, and it's all within relatively short distance from each other. We're there in Jerusalem, like Pastor Dave said, in the heart of Jewish Jerusalem, and we have Jews and Arabs and all kinds of nationalities attending our services. And it's amazing to see how at the feet of the cross, at the foot of the cross, there's peace. And brothers and sisters from different warring backgrounds find unity and fellowship with each other. It's sad to see that people judged on their affiliation, their background, and so we have people from various backgrounds taking part in our services. We sing Hebrew songs, Arabic songs, and we want to be a witness that the Messiah, Jesus, unites and brings people from various backgrounds together. We have a situation in Atlanta. How many have heard of President Ahmadinejad? Have any of you heard of him? He lives several countries away. We have Jordan next to us in the east, and then to the east of Jordan, we have Iraq, and then Iran. And he's the president of Iran. And there's hardly a week that doesn't go by that he doesn't threaten the obliteration, the annihilation of the nation of Israel, where we live. He says that Israel doesn't deserve to be a state. Israel by no means does everything right, but neither do they do everything wrong either. They're a nation like every other nation, and the freedom that the Arabs have in that land, they vote in the elections, they can become millionaires or business people. There's not always equality, but neither is there equality here for everybody in the United States, the last I heard. But they come and go, they travel. There's problems in the West Bank, and we have rioting, rock throwing, and people lose their lives in terrorism, and they built the wall. How many of you heard about the wall that is built around some of the sections of the West Bank? They did that largely to prevent suicide bombers from coming in and destroying buses with people on board. And we've seen many remains of buses that were totally destroyed with their passengers in it. And just like we've had the Boston bombers of late, who brought such havoc to that icon, that marathon icon in the U.S., well, we experience that very, very often. In fact, I've been through at least five wars in that nation, the Six-Day War, the 73 War, the Lebanese War, the Yom Kippur War, and so we've known what it is to live in a constant state of conflict, and the nations surrounding Israel, being Islamic, can't stand to have one nation that is not Islamic in their midst. According to Islam, the nations and territory that they once ruled can never be ceded to another power. They have to be regained and brought back into the full fold of Islam. So even if we would reach a peace agreement, a negotiated peace, the strict adherence and following of the Quran wouldn't allow them to forever be at peace with what they would call an alien country. So we're faced with external threat, internal threat, but God is on the throne, and he will bring all his promises to pass. And we'll see the ingathering. We've already seen the Jews regathered from all over the world, from Ethiopia, from Russia. While I've lived there, I've witnessed Jews come back from Argentina, an amazing thing that only prophecy that was true could possibly be fulfilled. Maybe at this point I can take a few questions. Yeah.
So do the Islams believe that the land was there from biblical times or just from 48, or what is their biggest objection to Jews occupying?
Anyone who's not a Muslim is an infidel.
Yeah.
And therefore, Israel was controlled by Islam since Muhammad. In fact, it's the very heart of the region. And so, like I said, any place that was once controlled by Islam has to be regained for Islam. That which would also include Spain as well. And they talk about that in their blogs and web pages on the internet. And parts of Greece even were under the Islamic rule. So that's...
So in the times of Mohammed, Israel was occupied by Islam.
Right, as they moved across. North Africa used to be Christian.
Right.
A lot of the church fathers were born and raised there, and it was strongly Christian. But there's hardly a Christian presence at all in North Africa. Asia Minor, Western Turkey and Southern Turkey was largely Christian. But now it's about 99% Muslim in Turkey. And so there's not a whole lot of tolerance in that strict interpretation of Islam. We love the Islamic people. We love the Arab people. We fellowship with them. They're our friends, and some attend our congregation. But the ones that have the ascendancy in their faith are those of the strict interpretation of Islam, and you've heard about the Arab Spring. Most of the regimes in North Africa and across the Middle East have been taken over by people related to the Muslim Brotherhood, which are substantially more radical and strict interpreting with Sharia law. That's very strict. It doesn't allow women to drive in Saudi Arabia. The cutting off of hands for those who would steal. The stoning of women that are suspected of infidelity, and on it goes. Those are just facts of life. So does that answer you? Any other?
Is it true that the most popular T-shirt in Israel says, "Don't worry, America, Israel is behind you"?
That of course is a joke, but
but is it true?
It's popular amongst the tourists. It wouldn't be probably healthy to wear it in certain sections of the city. But it is a popular one that a lot of tourists like to buy. Yeah.
Are your children Israeli?
Pardon?
Are they Israeli citizens, our children?
We're permanent residents. We have one of our daughters, because she married an Israeli citizen, became an Israeli citizen. But we can do everything. We can vote in all the elections except for the prime minister. We can vote for the mayor and things like that.
So your children didn't have to do a conscription?
No. There's a movement in Israel today to call up all the citizens, including the Arab citizens, to do some kind of civil service. And because all the Jewish citizens are called up, both men and women, and they have to spend a substantial time in the army. And then they're in the reserve units till age 45, 50. So the whole population is virtually prepared for any eventuality, and are called up periodically to keep them battle ready. And it's a citizen army. Any other?
Are there still many Holocaust survivors in Israel, or is that generation pretty much
No, that daughter of ours who married an Israeli citizen who is a strong believer, his grandparents, my daughter's husband's grandparents, both are survivors of Auschwitz. Auschwitz was the most notorious death camp. Spielberg, the big producer and director, actually interviewed them an hour apiece and interviewed them very carefully, very closely about their experience. They were in different camps, not only Auschwitz, but they were one of the fortunate few that survived, and they have the number tattooed on their arm, the original number. I was looking at that. We were just with them there, living in Corning, California, and I think it was 2144, something like that. That was his. He didn't have a name. He was just referred to by the number, of course. So there are many, but they're in their 80s and they're soon dying out. I mean, they won't be with us long. But there are those today, very, very prominent people, who deny the existence of the Holocaust. They say it never happened. If it did happen, just a few Jews died, and it's really a distortion of his history, because my daughter's own grandparents-in-law are living proof, and that shows any of us what we have to guard against. The radicalization and influences of ideologies that are dangerous. Germany was the most sophisticated, progressive nation in Europe. They had the great composers, the great artists, industry. They didn't lack anything, but they fell for the Nazi ideology, the National Socialism, and they turned because they had some problems, but they wanted to find a scapegoat, and the Jewish people were a convenient target, and so we have to, it behooves all of us, if it happened in Germany, it could happen in other countries as well. And we need to be careful. Yeah.
What's the attitude towards the Obama administration?
Israelis like the U.S. Because America's been their only friend, and so it doesn't matter who's elected; they'll like him. Some of them are a bit suspicious of his motives, and don't always agree with some of his attitudes. Even amongst the Palestinians, they might not like the U.S. government, but they like Americans, and they like to go to America. Just a kind of a cute story. A funny story. My friend, who lives in Lebanon, he was coming down to the northern border of Israel from the Lebanese side, and he had an Arab taxi driver who brought him all the way down. And all the way down, he was talking about the evils of America, how biased, how one-sided. How crazy the government is. He didn't miss any opportunity to criticize the U.S. government. But when he got to the border, and my friend got out of the car, he said, "Can you help me get a visa to America?" So he wanted to still come here. And we find that so often. Did I see another hand?
You say you're a permanent resident of Israel, but you were born in Colombia and your parents were Americans. Where are you a citizen?
I'm a U.S. citizen. Yeah. And and more importantly, like they said, I'm a citizen of heaven. And the regimes of this world will pass away, but the Lord's purposes will remain, and we all need to keep our focus on our heavenly allegiance. Any other?
Yeah. More about your church. So I have a young son and a couple of other kids, and so do you see in your churches are the young people or the young adults coming in and having a faith and following and wanting to make changes through their faith?
Believers in Messiah, you're talking about. Yeah, there's about 15,000 Jewish believers and about 15,000 Arab believers. There's only about 2%, less than 2%, closer to 1% of the population of Israel has some allegiance to Christ in some way. But the ones with active born-again experience, about 15,000 from Jewish and 15,000 from Arab backgrounds. Yes, they're active, and they witness to their faith. They're not always appreciated. They're discriminated against, and they could lose their job. They have to count the cost to follow the Lord. Not like us, here where it usually doesn't have too much repercussions if we believe. But somehow I feel that those days are getting shorter here, where we might be called to take a real stand, and we'll be increasingly looked down on. Already I see coming back from Israel, landing here, and just catching glimpses of radio and TV news. I feel the slippage, the tendency to look down and despise anything Christian. They're becoming more of a rare breed. But I think that's it's good in a way, because we all need to make that calculation: that are we in this for the good times, or in it for the long haul? Are we in it to stay, whether we're prosperous or alienated? And I think young people are looking for a cause, just like the Boston bombers. They were worldly young men and a lot of things that youth are involved in, but they were looking for a cause. And I think Christians too, are especially the young, are not looking for the nice padded soft life, but they're looking for a cause to commit their lives to. And so even though people from a Muslim background found a cause, I mean, they were deluded and brainwashed into thinking that would prove something. But so I think the things that are happening in our society today are showing us that we need to take real stock, and are we ready to suffer for our faith if we're called onto it, and that we're not just part of the majority, we're part of a despised minority. Even here in the States, it seems like anymore. So that's what is happening amongst the youth in Israel, from the Arab and Jewish people. Maybe I'll call on Liz to sing a song about Jerusalem. You wrote this, right? One of her own songs.
I just want to share one brief story with you, just to kind of give you an idea of what kind of mentality we're dealing with over there. We love to put up a Christmas tree every Christmas. Our Jewish and our Muslim friends demand it. They want to come over and sing the songs and share in our joy. And they love the atmosphere. They love the peace they feel when they walk in. They just love it, and they want to see it every year. And we had a bunch of neighborhood kids come in and help us. I let them decorate. They were having too much fun. They'd only seen one on a TV show, had never seen a live one. And of course, after they left, I redecorated. But the conversation that went on between them, they were aged 5 to 15, was quite interesting. One kid says, "I know what holiday this is. This is Hitler's birthday." And my ears just perked up, and another kid says, "No, you silly, it's not Hitler's birthday. It's the day Hitler died." And I'm like, wow, these kids don't really know anything about Christmas. And a third kid says, "No, you guys all have it all wrong. It's the day Jesus died, and the Arabs blame it on us." So I had I had a beautiful opportunity to share with them what Christmas really, really is all about. And of course, this was before the wall went up, so it was just a couple of miles away. And I said, "I'll even take you there and show you where Jesus was born." They all loved the idea. They all hopped into the van. Some ran, kids ran home and got their mothers. It was a wonderful day to be able to share who Jesus really is and why we actually celebrate Christmas. So that's a little bit of what we deal with. And I think my piano got turned off. The average Israeli has one, we were told by a lawyer friend who grew up, of course, in Israel and went to Israeli university. His whole education constituted of one page on Christianity, his whole life of education. So we got our work cut out. Jesus said, "Oh, Jerusalem, oh, Jerusalem, how I would have gathered you as a hen gathers her chicks, but you would not. And you will not see me again until I hear you say, 'Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord.'" Blessed, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Blessed, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Where are the ones I sent to speak in my name? They've been killed, they've been stoned. False prophets live again. Oh, Jerusalem, I cry for you. As a hen seeks her young under her wings, so would I have gathered you to myself. You would not. Oh, Jerusalem, I cry for you. How I long to hear these words from you. Blessed, blessed is he Baruch, Baruch Abba, B'Shem Adonai. Look now at your house, filled with eruptions, still scattered, still lost, still searching for a nest. Jerusalem, I cry for you. I will come again when I hear you say, blessed, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Baruch Abba, B'Shem Adonai. I brought some of those CDs with me. I'll leave them on the table. You're welcome to help yourself after the service.
Just one, is it on the mic?
Yeah.
The mic's on. Just one short story about my son who preached at our congregation 3 weeks ago. He's doing his MA at the Hebrew University, and there he met an Orthodox Jew. We talked a little bit about Orthodox Jews. Some of them are writing graffiti on our church building and so forth. But they're not all like that. In fact, we don't want to generalize about anyone. There's all kinds of good and bad in every community. But I'll just back up. The professor of that class, he was telling the class that if it wasn't for the M word, the missionaries, Israel would be in a much different, lower position than they are today. The Christians from the West brought advanced agriculture, advanced medicine, advanced education, almost every sphere of life. They really tremendously transformed the nation from a backwater third world country into what it is today. And he was saying this. The professor said, I'm a secular person. I'm not a believer, and I'm not trying to promote Christianity, but he said, as a people, we need to realize where all these benefits came from, to know our own history. And so our son Danny was making a few comments here and there, and the professor said, Danny, I see that you understand a bit about the subject. He said, how is that? And he said, well, my dad's a missionary, which might sound great to you, but in that context, he was like, dropped an atomic bomb there. And so everyone kind of gasped that he would admit that. And so an Orthodox Jewish young man studying with him in his class said, where do you worship? And this is interesting. So Danny gave him the address, and little did he know that he would come the next service. And Danny was preaching. It was kind of a divine thing, but it was a coincidence too. And he sat through the whole, he brought his wife, and they sat through the whole service. And our grandson happened, we read the scriptures in Old and New Testament scripture reading. And our grandson, who was 12 years old, who goes to Israeli schools, was doing the reading that week. And he read them in Hebrew. So the whole service was kind of tailor-made for this without planning it to be tailor-made for this Orthodox couple that were there in the service. And then they left, and he wrote Danny, our son, a text message on his phone, and he said, "Danny, I need to talk to you about this." And I, just yesterday, when we were in Corning, California, I asked him on the phone, did you ever have that talk with the Orthodox young men? And he said yes. And he said the thing that impressed him was that my son talked about having a living relationship with Jesus. And he said, "Do all the people in your church think like that, or is it just your church, or your denomination?" And he said, "No, that we all believe in having a living relationship with Jesus." And it was interesting. Of all the things he said during the message, that was the thing that touched him the most, that you could have this relationship with God. And because so much of their practice is tradition, you do things by rote, by memory, you run through the prayers, but there's no living connection. So that just happened in these last few weeks, and we're watching hand of God in all this, and that's how much of the work that happens in that country. That's what happens. So I just want to you tell it. I don't know if I can get through this next story.
The same son that Chuck is talking about, we just got word yesterday morning that they are expecting their third child. They have two adorable little boys. They're expecting a third son, but there are complications. He's due June 14th, but they have found a hole in his heart. They say he's possibly Down syndrome and many other complications, liver complications that could, he could die at birth, he could die shortly after, if he lives. But we know doctors have been wrong before, and we're praying for a miracle and would really appreciate your prayers with us. Thank you.
Before I take this, just a couple of other things I wanted to, I didn't get a chance to ask my question. What are the greatest challenges that you face?
Well, one of the challenges that we have in Atlanta is dealing with all the, I mentioned, baggage that the Jews have. They suffered under the Holocaust, the Second World War, where 6 million died. They have the memory of the Inquisition from Spain, the pogroms of Eastern Europe, and throughout history, those Christians who were in name only persecuted Jews for being Jews. They were scapegoat not only for the Nazis. They've been the scapegoat throughout history, and so they have that collective memory, and that's drilled into them. In fact, do any of you know about the Armenian genocide in World War I? Well, Hitler drew the analogy that the world was silent when about 2 million Armenians were killed by the Ottoman Turks, and he rationalized that he could get by with killing the Jews because the rest of the world was silent when the Armenians were killed. So he felt like he had a carte blanche, an open check. And so that's probably the one greatest obstruction to considering the claims of the Messiah, Jesus. Yeah.
So, and any other, just as considering, you know, ministering the responsibilities that you have there, would you say that would be the single greatest challenge? And would there be other challenges that?
Well, the religious leaders drill into the people as well, that people like us are trying to steal their identity and steal their soul. They say that they lost millions of people in these different times of persecution, but now their identity as Jewish people is threatened, and they're very jealously guard their identity as Jews, and we say the opposite. You know, if you're Iranian or if you're a Jew or an Eskimo, you don't stop being what you grew up as, but you have saving faith, which makes you prepared to be with the Lord for eternity.
Yeah.
And so we have whole communities of Messianic Jews that are pay their taxes, serve in the army, do all the things that Israelis do. They're fully Jewish, but they have saving faith in what we call Yeshua.
Yeah.
You heard the name Yeshua, right?
Yes.
His name in Arabic, it's Isa. And so that's...
say that again.
Isa. Isa. And just the whole society is feeling under attack and under threat from so many different fields that it's hard for them to open up their hearts. And then there's the thing that Paul talked about. There's a blindness, a collective blindness on the Jewish people, that in the fullness of time, God will lift that blindness, and I believe they'll see, and nationwide they'll start turning to the Lord. So there's also that.
So we, you know, our congregation, obviously, not only very small, but we're a very long ways away from Israel. And would there be anything that we could do to help, to assist? Is there anything that we could partner with you?
Well, maybe you might want to set up a team and come over and work on some project there. That would be something we'd welcome. And I would urge young people to come over there and spend some weeks there.
Yeah.
And... What the Jews do, they have a program that brings high school students over to Israel, and that sets a bond with the land of the Bible, and they're forever changed. And I personally feel that it'd be great, just like you came and spent a sabbatical. I think every U.S. pastor and we're come and be in that land to absorb the geography, the culture, the language, and this, to see where their faith grew from, and that it does so much to enrich one's faith.